Final hour overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 2. Brian Hayes, Jamie Noodles, McLennan. We've got our buddy Chris Johnston later in the hour. We got two games in the Stanley Cup playoffs tonight. A couple of games to look back on last night as well. And CJ continues to write about the Leafs and the aftermath of the Leafs. And Jack Campbell, I think that's probably the biggest storyline between now and July 13th is free agency. You know, the draft comes before that, but the Leafs, they don't have a lot of draft capital. I mean, they could be active at that point, and there could be deals between now and free agency for sure, but kind of feels like Jack Campbell, like, you got to figure out what's going on in net before you can really move forward with any plan. Like, if you don't have goaltending, you're screwed.
I agree. There's two things that I think the Leafs should put to bed, and one of them is very easy, and it's actually ridiculous, but I've thought it's been ridiculous all along. I think this Austin Matthews, like, would want to leave narrative, and that is garbage. But I also think that it's almost blowback for, you know, Leaf fans saying McDavid wants out of Edmonton. Like, I feel like that's a narrative.
Oh,
it's like, you know what I mean? Because if the Oilers lost in the first round, what would have been trender? McDavid and Draisaitl want out of Edmonton.
Yep.
Now, if they get swept in Calgary, there still might be the lunatics that say that. But ultimately, not every player wants to leave just because they haven't had success there. How about be a difference instead of being, you know, quitting halfway through? I don't think Austin Matthews will ever want out of Toronto unless he chooses a different situation and things either, you know, at some point he makes that choice. But he could be a Leaf for life.
Well, that's got to be the plan, right?
And I just hate
that narrative.
They treated
him incredibly well, right?
I agree. But he's given back to the city too.
Like, it goes both ways.
He's the face of the franchise. So, you know, for me, that one should be put to bed. The other one, I agree. Like, Jack Campbell, I don't know what the marketplace is for him. I don't know what his asking price is from him and his camp. But it'll be interesting to see how that unfolds, because if you're building from the net out, what are they going to do with Peter Mrazek? You're going to roll it back and see if he's going to come back. Well, then you got to take a look at Jack Campbell's situation. Are you going to give him term? Are you going to give him a lot of money? Or are you going to do the Carolina model and go, we're going to find somebody else in that spot? Like, I think he wants to be here. I think they want him.
I think that's genuine. I think Jack Campbell appreciates the opportunity that they gave him, that he worked for as well. You know, when he came here, he was a backup for Freddie Anderson. They did not acquire him with this vision of him taking over as the number one guy. That happened, you know, somewhat organically because of the injuries to Anderson. And then once Campbell got in the net, all of a sudden he took off. So I'm not sure the Leafs ever expected to be in a position like this. I'm not sure Jack Campbell did when he arrived. But when he was in L.A., he always was destined for backup duty because of Jonathan Quick. And when he got here, like, at 30 years old, he became the guy. Went to the All-Star game. Now, he had to work for that. He had to work for that, and he's an unrestricted free agent. It's completely up to him what he wants to do.
Agreed.
But I think he genuinely appreciates the opportunity the Leafs gave him. I think also the Leafs, even though, you know, we keep harping on the reality that they keep losing in the first round, they're still a very good team.
Right.
You know, like, it may be difficult for him. Maybe it won't be. But if he signed in Buffalo, you know, or Detroit, like two teams that are on the up and up but not quite there and still could be years away from turning the corner, you might get more money, you might get more term, right? Like, you always bring up Grubauer, who he had it made in the shade in Colorado. He would have been their guy, and instead he took extra term, extra money, went to Seattle, and Seattle was the second or third worst team in the league.
Yeah.
And guess what they're going to be next year?
Exactly.
One of the two or three worst teams in the league. So you're destined for constant losing. These are all things that have to be, you know, brought into the forefront here if you're Campbell and company. But, you know, the Leafs, it would be incredibly bold if they turned over the complete, you know, goaltending situation. Like, if Campbell walked and they found a suitor for Mrazek, you start from scratch, that takes some stones, man, to go into an offseason and be like, we're looking for two new goalies.
But they might have to.
If
they want to take more salary somewhere else, you know what I mean? You might have to, you know, trim a little bit of the fat at that position. I don't think they will, but like I said before, everything has to be on the table. You're not rolling back the same team.
No, that's for sure.
That's
for sure.
I feel.
Yeah, absolutely. I wonder what the vibe is down in Washington with the Capitals. Couldn't get out of the first round again for the for what is that, 4 years in a row since they won the Cup?
Yeah.
I don't think they get out of the first round. That must really be tough. Here's our buddy Steve Sands from NBC and the Golf Channel. I guess you did have a cup before all this playoff ineptitude, Sandsy, so you have that going for you.
Is it 1967? I forget.
Yeah, I guess I set you up for that.
Six in a row now?
Yeah,
Are they bringing Wendell Clark back? What are we doing? Ty Domi coming back up there
possibly.
In Toronto?
Yeah, possibly.
If you're going to give me the business, fellas, come on now.
I can't blame you.
Four straight first-round losses after winning the Stanley Cup. And of the four, the first one was the worst. They were up 3-1 on Carolina, just completely choked. The last two, COVID, whatever, nobody cares because it was such a bizarre deal. The bubble, the no fans, the whole thing. This year, with this team, playing Florida as an 8 seed and a 1, winning the first game, losing the second, coming back to D.C., winning game 3, up 2-1, and up 2-1 in game 4 with 2 minutes left when Florida pulled its goalie and had a very bad bounce and missed an open net by hitting the post. It would have been a 3-1 series lead. The Caps should have won that series 4-1, and they lost it 4-2. And I still, for the life of me, as disappointed as I am, as bummed as I am, for the life of me, I can't believe they lost that series. Just awful. But you guys, we give each other a lot of crap. I love you guys. And I love the Leafs, and I love hockey, and I love playoff hockey. They're so hard to eliminate Tampa Bay, as Florida found out again last night. Tampa Bay is just so damn tough, and Toronto should have won that series too, but they let Tampa Bay off the hook. And when you let a champ off the hook, no matter what the sport is, the champ is going to punch back, and they punch back, and it's such a shame. I was rooting for the Leafs big time.
Yeah, it hurt.
Yeah,
that one stung.
I agree. I mean, I get back to your Washington team. I think they've got to figure out in net. You know, that's the biggest thing. That's the only thing that I know everyone, the, you know, Backstrom situation and Ovi getting older, all of that type of stuff. But I like the team, like the spine of the team. I think they're battle tested. But I think they look in net. There's some uncertainty. And when it comes to the Leafs, we've been dissecting it all week here, Sanzi. And it's just, you know, you got a great team ran up against another great team. But, you know, you can't have excuse after excuse. That's the biggest thing. And I don't know, you know, you're around golf. You're around a lot of sports. You know, if a guy continually can't get over the hump, you have to find a different way to get over there, and they just haven't been able to do it, unfortunately. And, you know, the fan base is frustrated here. There's no lying about that.
Oh, I bet. There's a couple things about that. It's a great point. And it pertains to sports, team sports like the NHL and hockey, and individual sports like golf and tennis. In golf, there's a saying in golf, at least I've said it, but there's a saying in golf that you can win a major championship and not be considered a great player, but you cannot be considered a great player unless you win a major championship. Does that make sense?
Yep.
And when a putter is hot for a player, it alleviates the pressure in the rest of his bag. All of a sudden, his driver's a little better, his iron plays a little better, his chipping and pitching, his bunker plays a little bit better, because he knows that the pressure is alleviated because his putter is working so well. When a goalie is not strong, the team knows it. The defensemen especially know it. And they play defense. You play hockey differently when your goalie isn't strong. And look at the way the Lightning play with that goalie in net. I mean, just look at the way they play. Look at the confidence they have, knowing they have that backstop there. The Caps didn't have that. The Caps need to get a little younger with some of its other players. The core is great. I agree with you on that. You're not going to blow up the core, but they need to get a little younger. They need to get a little faster. But more importantly, they need to have a backstop back there, man. You got to have a great goalie to get through May and June. And in golf, if you want to circle back to golf, with the way that the Leafs went out again and how disappointing it is, Sergio Garcia was the best player in the world, and he finally won a major championship after declaring that he could never win one. He didn't have the chops to do it. He ended up winning at Augusta in 2017. There, Darren Clark did it at the Open Championship in 2011. after 25 years of coming close at majors, he finally hoisted the claret jug when he won at Royal St. George's in 2011. There are things in sports that should give the good folks up there in Toronto and everybody else who roots for the Leafs a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. I was texting back and forth with Sungjae Im's caddy, who listens to you guys religiously, Billy Spetchett. Billy was telling me he's just distraught, you know, at the loss, another first-round loss. At least we got ours in 2018, he was saying, and he's right. Yeah. But it only buys you so much time. But I said, man, with Austin, he's such a special player, and the team is good. They got to get over the hump. And I feel like it's like the Caps, guys. Maybe I'm wrong. You guys know more about this than me. But when the Caps got past the first round in 2018, they played the Penguins in the second round. It had been only the third time in Ovechkin's career he'd gotten past the first round. When they beat the Penguins in the second round to get to the Eastern Conference Finals, by the way, against Tampa Bay, when they got past Pittsburgh in the second round, I remember saying to my two brothers, we're going to win the Cups. First time I'd ever said that in my life. Because the pressure was alleviated. I feel like if the Leafs get past the first round, not even a second, if this group gets past the first round, they're going to go a long way. So they're too good. They just need to lift that pressure off their shoulders, and that's not easy to do in sports, man.
No, it's not. But I think you're onto something there, Sansy, for sure. We're chatting with Steve Sands, who's with the Golf Channel, NBC, and obviously big Caps fan, big DC sports fan. And I wonder if we can apply this and segue it into golf with Rory McIlroy having to play well on Thursday at a major. Like, if he does that, which he did today, he's in the lead at 5-under, does that catapult him into another great weekend, which is what he's prone to do? Just a lot of times it's too little too late because he blows up his weekend on Thursday.
Yeah, that's a great point. McIlroy hasn't won a major, fellas, in 8 years.
Wow.
8 years. Imagine that. Rory McIlroy had four majors from 2011 to 2014, and now he hasn't won one in 8 years. He's let a lot of his prime slide away. However, that finish he had on Sunday at the Masters was magical, and I'm not just talking about the bunker shot he made at 18 when he was with Colin Morikawa. The round itself was magical. Now here he is the next month at the next major in the first round, which is the most difficult round for him for whatever reason, and he goes out and plays fabulous golf today. No one's getting to 5-under par this afternoon if the wind stays up. And I think that tomorrow is a massive day for Rory McIlroy. Massive. Here's why. The forecast tomorrow is supposed to call for some pretty high winds. Rory, famously, is a terrible, and I don't know why, he's terrible in relation to his other parts of his game in the wind. So he has to play tomorrow afternoon. He played early today. Tomorrow afternoon is his time slot, and most likely it's going to be in some pretty challenging wind. He played so well today, gave him a little bit of a cushion. If he can hang in there tomorrow, every single major championship that's been played at Southern Hills in Tulsa, every single one, seven previous, more than any other golf course in America, other than Augusta National, which hosts the Masters every year, Southern Hills has provided and produced more major championships than any other golf course in America. And every time, the 36-hole leader has gone on to win. How about that stat?
Wow.
Every time.
Wow.
So he's leading now. Eight of ten times they've been there. Seven of eight majors. And here we are at a major again, and Rory gets off to a great start today, which he needed to do. And tomorrow, he's just going to have to buckle it up and show what he's made of, because he's such a great player, such a great competitor. Tomorrow is a huge, huge day for Rory McIlroy.
So he tees off at 9:11, and about an hour earlier, John Daly is driving right down, hammering. I mean, he was 2-under through seven. What do you make of, you know, Daly with the cart driving up the middle between the green and even his look and just everything that John Daly brings to the table?
Well, first of all, if I wasn't 53 years of age, I would have thought that Santa Claus was teeing it up this morning when I saw John Daly. That's the first thing. Second of all, I was with John a couple of days ago in Tulsa. We were at a dinner together with a bunch of guys. And I said, John, you have a chance with this golf course? He said, zero, except for my experience. but I have zero chance of competing on this golf course. It's too much for me. I don't chip it and pitch it as well as I used to. I don't putt it as well as I used to. I don't hit it as far as I used to, that kind of stuff. And here he comes out this morning and plays well. I don't know whether it's a dream for the PGA of America and television and the audience for him to be in the mix on the weekend, or it's a nightmare to see someone in a golf cart, in a professional event, with that type of advantage over the other guys who are trying to walk, most notably a guy like Tiger, who's basically doing it on one and a half legs as opposed to two full ones. And it's great to see John play well. It was fun to spend some time with him a couple nights ago. You know, when you get the Miller lights flowing and John Daly telling stories, that's pretty good.
Oh, yeah. Well, you mentioned Tiger, and he had a hot start. He birdies his first hole. At one point, he was two under through, I believe, five or six. And then the wheels fell off for him, and he ends up four over. And I think that takes him out of contention to win the tournament. Doesn't take him out of contention to make the cut. But I'm curious where you think his mental state will be at for the round tomorrow. Because with Augusta, he had a great Thursday, held on for dear life on Friday, but made the cut. Now it would have to be reversed. He's got to go really low tomorrow. Do you think he's got it in him to do that?
I don't. I did not think he was going to make the cut going into the week. I know he's healthier, and I know he's stronger, and I know he's still Tiger Woods. But, guys, there's no substitute for tournament conditions, tournament golf, being in the fray, having the adrenaline flowing, and trying to perform. Now, I know he knows how to get that done. Clearly, he's the greatest player of his generation. It's been a while. He played those 4 days at Augusta, like you said, 78-78 on the weekend after he ran out of gas. He shot that 71, one under par 71 on day one, and looked decent. Didn't look great, looked decent. But what do you expect, you know, coming back from an accident like that in the condition that his leg is in? Here's the thing with Tiger. And did you guys watch the round this morning?
Yeah, I saw a little bit. I didn't see the whole thing.
All right, so you guys can observe things just like I can, just like anybody else can, all the audience who's listening right now. When he's playing well, he's got a little bit of a bounce in his step, and he's smiling, and he's talking, and he's having a good time. And then when he hits a couple of bad shots, and as the round wears on, it wears down his leg. It wears down his endurance. It wears down his psyche. You know, I hear this all the time from professional athletes. I never really thought it was true, but I guess it is. When you get physically tired, you then lose the concentration that also makes you a great performer at the highest level. And he putted worse than he's ever putted in his life on the weekend at Augusta National. And today you could see, after that fifth, sixth, seventh hole, you could just see him being tired.
Right.
You can almost feel it through the television. And I don't know how you get your endurance back at that level. I don't know how you get that chip on your shoulder that you used to have, the intimidation factor. I don't know how you get any of that back. He's 46 years old. He hasn't played a lot of tournament golf. He's played a lot of practice rounds at home. He's worked on his chipping and pitching and his putting. He's worked on his long game. He's working out. He's getting stronger. He's healthier. He's alive. He died in that accident, all the good things. But, man, when you put the peg in the ground against the best players in the world, by the way, he's playing in majors only. Maybe he plays in the Memorial in a couple weeks. But when you play in major championships, guys, you're talking about playing the most difficult conditions, the most difficult golf courses against the best fields in the world. It's almost like you'd be better off if you went to Hilton Head and played at the RBC Heritage, or went up to, you know, Hamilton and played in the RBC Canadian, you know, as opposed to playing in the majors to start this comeback. And it's a really tough spot for Tiger. I think tomorrow's going to be a difficult day as well. I don't think it's going to be anything ridiculous. I just think he's going to kind of do what he did today. Have a few birdies, have some bogeys, have some great shots, have some bad shots. Next thing you know, you look up, he's a little bit over par, and he probably will miss the cut, which is, you know, it's a shame, but he's working his way back into it, and we'll see how it plays out.
Yep, we certainly will. We certainly will.
I was going to ask what's the feeling about not having defending champion Phil there?
Oof, man, it was rough on Monday and Tuesday. I think once yesterday it came and everybody had already talked about it and everybody had already been asked about it, by the time we got to last night, we were done. And now it's about the tournament. Now it's about Tiger. It's about Rory. It's about all the players trying to win a Watermaker Trophy at Southern Hills. It's about the golf course. It's about the town of Tulsa, the whole thing. Look, he's missed. He's missed big time. He's an iconic player, top 10 player of all time. Wasn't a random guy winning the PGA last year. It was Phil Mickelson. He became the oldest winner of any major championship in the history of the sport. You can make a strong case that his accomplishment last year at Kiawah Island was the greatest sports feat in North America in 2021. You could make a case for that. And now here he is, unable to receive the adulation and the love that a defending champion gets, especially when you're a legend like Phil, especially when you are defending that particular major championship. It's a sad situation. The players will welcome him back. You know, it'll be really interesting to see how the tour and the PGA of America and the USGA and the RNA and all these other organizations, what they decide to do. But the players will welcome him back, and the fans will welcome him back. You know, it's not like Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds, who didn't have a chance. Roger spent a lot of time in Toronto with you guys. Yep. Roger and Barry, they retired and just took the bullets from everybody. They didn't have a chance to strike people out, win Cy Youngs, win another World Series, hit home runs, do things that Barry and Roger did. They were retired, and they were just taken to the woodshed by the media and by fans. Tiger, on the other hand, other players who have gone through personal, you know, issues and also injuries and comebacks, when you play your way through it in professional sports, we're a forgiving society. United States, Canada, most people very forgiving, and they love seeing people perform at a high level. And Tiger is more beloved now than he's ever been before. Even after all the things that have gone in his life, he's more popular now than ever before. And if Phil would come back and play, I think it would do him some good. Take the bullets from the writers and the media and answer the questions. Be contrite, be honest, and just get it over with. Go play, and then you're done. But he's choosing to stay away. The PGA of America wanted him to play, you know? It's not like anybody doesn't want him to play. He's choosing to stay away, and I think the longer he stays away, the worse off that entrance is going to be. That on-ramp is getting smaller and smaller, I think.
Yeah, it's – well, I guess we'll see him over in London in a month. I don't even know. Oh,
man. Now, if he does that, fellas, that's going to change the narrative quite a bit because – sorry, a plane's going over by. If he plays in that London event, you could very well never see him play a PGA Tour event ever again.
Right.
Because the PGA Tour might ban him. And if they do, that's their prerogative, and he knows that. Can you imagine Phil Mickelson? Phil Mickelson, we're not talking about some run-of-the-mill guy here. We're talking about a guy who's a top 10 player of all time, a six-time major champion, a World Golf Hall of Fame member, a guy who moves the needle, the second most popular and second greatest player of his generation. If he goes and plays in that event on June 9th outside of London for LIV Golf, I don't think we'll ever see him again at a PGA Tour event, and he needs to decide what he wants to do. That win last year, all those wins he had in his career, that makes him a lifetime member of the PGA Tour. He will never play a PGA Tour event again if he plays in the LIV Golf event, I don't think. I think they'll suspend him and suspend him forever.
Wow. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, it's
but who knows?
We don't know yet.
But it'll be a fascinating decision what he and those other guys are going to do.
It sure does. Sanzi, it's always great to catch up with you. Thank you for doing this, buddy. We'll do it again soon.
Are we thinking Colorado?
Yeah, I think we're thinking Colorado, right, Noodles? We're thinking Colorado.
Colorado, Tampa Bay, Colorado, Carolina?
You're one of those two, I would guess.
It's got to be. I mean, they're very strong, but I mean, the two things that you brought up, like, I don't see Vasilevsky, especially out east, a team beating him four times with how well he's playing. But then Colorado has played in a different league all year. I really feel like they're just been they look unbeatable. Now, something could change. That's why you play the games and injury inconsistently, all of that. But just if Colorado's healthy and playing their game, they look unbeatable. They do.
Yeah, I agree. I think Colorado looks really, really good.
Oof. Yeah. Well, we'll find out soon. Sooner than later, buddy. Thank you for doing this.
Of course, anytime, Phil.
Steve Sands, our buddy from the Golf Channel on NBC. And this golf report is brought to you by your Ontario Subaru dealers. Whatever the weather throws your way, you're covered in a new Subaru with uncommon capability and symmetrical full-time all-wheel drive. Yeah, it feels like Colorado's a safe bet right now to make it to a cup final, but nothing's locked in stone yet. Nothing's written in stone, and I'm sure Calgary, I'm sure St. Louis. Listen, St. Louis is a proud organization. They'll play better tonight.
I agree, but, and they're deep, and they've got bite, and they've got pedigree. But honestly, like
Colorado's
Calgary,
just so good.
Yeah, they're so good. I think if Calgary, if the goalie stands on his head, like
I
he was terrible last night, but Markstrom, he just talked about it, and he was so true, Sanzi, talking about a goaltender just gives a team a different type of confidence.
Changes everything. Yep, it does.
I thought about that. It's pretty interesting. I mean, I played with some great goalies, man. That's the difference, right?
Let's bring in Chris Johnson on the other side, get his take on his article about Jack Campbell, where the Leafs are going in net, and back into the Battle of Alberta in the Stanley Cup playoffs with our buddy CJ. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, two more games tonight in the Stanley Cup playoffs. The Battle of Alberta, man, it got started last night. I mean, put it lightly, that was quite the start. I've had a difficult time defining what that was. Was it entertaining? Was it a good game? Was it a crazy game? It's a memorable game. I don't think there's any denying that. 9-6 in 2022. You don't see that ever.
Well, let me ask you. You have no skin in that game. You're just watching as a fan. Did you like it? Did you think it was weird?
I found it very fascinating. I never really felt like it was a game. Even though Edmonton got back into it, I always thought Calgary was going to win.
Yeah.
And like my initial thought was Mike Smith isn't going to give them a chance to win, and then really Mike Smith kind of became an afterthought because the game was eventually tied early in the third. But it was a just result. Like Calgary was certainly better.
Yeah.
Here's our TSN Hockey insider Chris Johnston. CJ, how would you define the first chapter of the Battle of Alberta last night?
Well, if I'm going to be honest, I went to bed when it was 5-1 because I thought it was that little of a game, and I don't normally do that, but it literally just looked like Calgary was going to roll the victory. You know, obviously I've since caught up on what I missed. It's just a strange, strange game. I mean, the Flames score 13 goals in a 7-game series, went over Dallas, and then get 9 with the empty netter in game 1 and round 2. So that about sums up how weird it is. I don't think that there's, it's one of those ones, if we were going deep on that series, if you're, you know, one of the journalists that's there covering it every day, or if this show is based out of Calgary, Edmonton, like, I don't think you can pull that much out of it in terms of, you know, storylines or trends that you think are going to continue. I just think it was one of those strange ones that the tape will get burned. If you're in the stands, probably a hell of a lot of fun. But I'm guessing game 2 is going to look completely different.
I agree, CJ. Like, I was thinking about it last night, and it comes back to the saying, you know, Calgary's up 1-0. However it happened, you know, the coaches are like, burn the tape. The goalie coach is like, don't even look at that again. Like, you know, Edmonton, I think there is some teaching moments is the wrong word, but it's like, hey, do you want to play like this? Because that's what's going to happen. You're going to give up 9. Like, I think there are some things where it's like, guys, like, you gave up 27 slot shots. Like, you can't, Johnny Gaudreau's line will chew you apart. It'll be done in 4 games if you do that. Like, that's it. Like, so it's there are some things you can lay out there, but ultimately, I know players have, like, they have amnesia from game to game. Like, they lost. The game's over. They'll move on. And I think that's where, if you're Edmonton, you're like, yeah, we're down 1-0, but if we win tomorrow night, we got home ice advantage heading home. So that has to be the focus. But it's certainly from a fan's perspective and media, there's lots of little storylines to kind of pull out of it. But it was kind of a weirdly entertaining game last night for a casual fan.
Well, and it reminds me of like Tampa-Toronto, right? It was 5-0 in game 1. You know, the Lightning lost. And you know, as much as that was a great victory for the Leafs, if you're the Lightning, you just go win game 2 and everything's back to level footing. I think that's, you know, you're hitting on the point there, Noodle. I think Edmonton, doesn't really matter how you lost. You know, a bunch of pucks went through Markstrom, which you just don't see too often, too. I mean, it was a strange, strange night, I think is the best way to put it. And, you know, I do think that the rest of the series will just look completely different. We'll be talking about sort of different elements that the teams have over each other. Obviously, the Oilers, if they turn the puck over like that, they're going to have no chance. But, you know, I don't expect that to be the case. I still think this will be a close series. And McDavid just quietly putting up 4 points in a loss. I mean, this guy's in God mode right now in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Yeah, he certainly is. Yeah, he was, I mean, that's the thing, a night like that from McDavid, and it's not really one that you're going to remember because he lost, you know, and it was more about the goaltending and the defensive woes and, you know, there's more buzz about Markstrom performing and Sutter's postgame comments and Brady Tkachuk being a super fan. Meanwhile, like, there's the best player in the world dancing. Like, that's what he was doing last night. He was in the mood to play. And if his team gave him anything defensively or goaltending, I mean, that probably was a game McDavid was going to, like, will to victory. You know, or it certainly felt like that anyway. But it just never was a possibility.
Right. I mean, he's getting, like, spinorama assists, yeah. One-handed flick passes, the nice goal he scored, the first goal. I mean, yeah. I mean, I think that'll actually be a storyline in the series. You know, because I'm saying I think everything's going to be different. You know, McDavid does – he's been so good. But, like, this playoffs, right, he's got multiple point games in 7 of the 8 games he's played. You know, that I think as we look towards tighter checking games in the series, that'll be an interesting thing, you know, what Calgary – can do about him. And I saw today Sutter was sort of talking about that in his remarks to the reporters, just that McDavid was by far the best player on the ice and they got to concern themselves with that. And you know, I still think he's going to have a huge impact in not just, you know, in a big comeback for the Oilers, you know, whether they're down that deep, but where, you know, he's going to be a factor that the Flames got to really focus in on.
With Chris Johnston, our TSN hockey insider. So you've written an article about Jack Campbell and his contract moving forward. I think it's probably the number one priority for the Leafs is for them to figure out what they're going to do in net. I don't think you can move on beyond that until you figure out that position. It's the most important position in the sport. So what is your read on maybe the first move for the Maple Leafs? How are they going to approach this between now and free agency?
It's a tricky one, right? Because I still think it can go a couple directions with their goaltending. I mean, you have two NHL spots. Right now, one of them is eaten up by the $3.8 million on Peter Mrazek's contract. You know, it's not a mystery or to think that the Leafs will explore ways they might be able to get out from under that deal, that they put Peter Mrazek on waivers on trade deadline day or the day before, trying to entice someone to take him for free. You know, everyone passed. But you know, I think that will be a factor in whatever happens, because if he's back making $3.8 million, I just don't see how they could ever pay Jack Campbell what his market value is going to be, you know, to have those guys as a tandem again. You know, if you're getting rid of Mrazek, what does it cost in terms of another, you know, prospect or, you know, draft picks or what have you, you know, in terms of trying to get teams to take that on? And then in the middle of all this, you know, Jack Campbell's a player. Let's remember, he's 12 years on from when he was drafted 11th overall.
Right.
And this was the first season in his career, finally, where he played more than half his team's games in the NHL, you know, where he's a number one guy after a long, long time. Relative to his peers and what guys make, he hasn't made that much money. And this is his opportunity, you know, to cash in, so to speak, or to get what he's worth. He's reached a different stage of his career. He's 30 years old. And so what I think is interesting in terms of the dynamic here is, okay, the Leafs are juggling a few different balls in terms of what they do at that position. But on top of that, you have a player that I think, you know, it's fair to say the Leafs like and he likes here. But, you know, they talked contract with his agent last summer and couldn't get anywhere. And, you know, I'm not certain. It's too soon to say where this will go, but I don't think it's unfair to sort of point out that this one might be a difficult one for the two sides to find, you know, happy ground. Because a number of goaltenders, as Noodles will know, that are kind of in Jack Campbell's range have signed for about $5 million a year in the last 12 months, and I would expect he's looking for something similar. And unless the Leafs can get out from Mrazek and come up with another second option that's cheaper, I just don't see how they pay him $5 million to stay.
I agree. Like, we were talking about it the other day, and everything is about comparables and what a team is willing to pay for your services. But this is a unique one based on his age, based on how much he's played, you know, in his career. This year he played 49 games in the regular season because of an injury, because of other things. But that's his career high. I look at him as kind of that tandem goaltender, and you just mentioned $5 million range. That's kind of the Robin Lehner neighborhood. Now, Lehner had a couple years where, you know, the numbers were really good, and same thing with Jack Campbell. But it's just, you know, can the Leafs afford that number? Do they want him on term at that number? There's so many different things. Or, you know, do you want that Carolina model where you've walked away from your goaltenders, you move them, and you start over? But it'll all come in. This is the multi-million dollar question for us, guys, is if Jack Campbell doesn't like what he sees in this particular situation, this is a business. He might get an offer from somebody else, and it might be the Philip Grubauer situation. It's like, Philip Grubauer, left Colorado, left a team that's a cup favorite to right. go and get more money. Now, I understand it. I respect it because, you know, when you run the numbers, it's about $10 extra million for Grubauer guaranteed. So it's not
that's
peanuts.
A lot of money.
That's a lot of money. But you're getting hazard pay going over to Seattle. Like, keep that in mind. The grass, you know, grass may be greener in cash, but it's not going to be greener in, you know, wins and you know, trying to get to the ultimate
guaranteed
prize.
Guaranteed money, though. Doesn't matter where your stats are.
But
that money's guaranteed.
So Jack's got to sort that out. Does he want to run it back here? You know, have an opportunity with the Leafs on a very good team, and his numbers look pretty good if he can hold up and all that? Or do you go to a team that, you know, wants to give you a little bit more, maybe a little bit more security, but, man, it could look ugly for a year or two?
Right. It's an interesting dance on both ends. You know, the one thing, if you're Campbell, it's the easiest thing for me to understand. Obviously, never been a pro athlete, but if he can go make a lot more money somewhere else, I would never hold that against him. Like I understood why Zach Hyman left Toronto, because, you know, the Leafs just couldn't pay him that. It's not, they love the guy. He loved it here. You know, his family's from here. He'll probably live in Toronto the rest of his life post-career, but it just didn't, they didn't match up business-wise. And so if that's what, or, you know, prompts Jack to leave, should he leave? That makes sense to me. But if he's having second thoughts and, you know, the team's got to, I mean, I'm from the goaltending is voodoo camp a little bit. I have a hard time. Well, you know, when people ask, like, okay, if they move on from Jack Campbell, who are they going to sign? And look, I can look at the free agent list like anyone else. There's guys that are free agents this year that have had tons of success in the league that have won Stanley Cups. Like, I don't know what the answer is. I mean, it's a difficult question, but it's a huge decision, obviously, if you're Toronto, because like Carolina a year ago, I know they were nervous. You know, they brought in Frederik Anderson and Antti Raanta, but they had a good team, and you bring in two goalies, you just don't know how it's going to go. It went pretty well for them this year, even though they're kind of dealing with the injury situation with Freddie now. But, you know, if the Leafs do end up bringing in two new goaltenders, which I don't think is impossible, you have this great team, you have everything you did this year, but it could all be sunk if that, you know, if those decisions don't work for you. And that's sort of what I think the Leafs are going to have to work through here in the next 6, 7, 8 weeks.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious with how Shanahan and Dubas explained everything on Tuesday, explained their own viewing of what happened this year and into the playoffs and their own impressions of it. And even though they lost in the first round, you know, Shanahan was trying to paint it somewhat of a positive picture and felt like they were on their toes this year as opposed to their heels. Again, it doesn't mean anything, but I guess if that's right. Your evaluation, so, you know, so be it. But wouldn't Jack Campbell apply there too? Like, in other words, if they felt good about the whole process and Campbell was a primary part of it, you're not going to make change for the sake of change, then shouldn't it be a priority to bring back Campbell? Like, where do you draw the line on them loving their team, even though they don't win anything, and wanting to effectively run it back, which we'll see if that's actually true or not, without, like, one of the three or four main pillars, the starting goalie, guy who was your guy all year?
Well, it's just down to dollars and cents, I think. You know, Jack Campbell made, what, about $1.7 million this year, so they paid roughly $5.5 million in NHL money for their goaltending. I mean, potentially he's getting almost that much himself. And so I think the decision largely is dollars and cents. I mean, there might be an element of performance in there. But, you know, if he's looking to get what, you know, Ullmark got in Boston, which is $5 million, you know, Cal Peterson signed for $5 million in L.A. Merzlikin signed for $5.4 in Columbus. You know, Saros got $5 million in Nashville. You know, if he can get into that range, I really have a hard time seeing how they do it, because, you know, obviously they still have to try to upgrade. They've got RFA contracts for Sandin and Liljegren and Pierre Engvall. You know, there's only so much to go around. And so I do think ultimately it just might be a financial, you know, situation where you've got a player in this case, you know, like Mark Giordano might stick here because he doesn't need to make money, right? He's trying to win a Stanley Cup, and he likes playing in his hometown, much like we've seen from Jason Spezza in the last few seasons. I mean, I could see a scenario where he stays probably a little bit below what he could get if he wanted to hit the open market. I think Jack Campbell almost has no choice but to get market value just because, you know, he hasn't maximized his value at this point. And so that's sort of where it seems to me like it's at. I mean, there's still time here. I don't think everything's still pretty fresh and raw in terms of the loss. Like, no decisions have been reached, but, you know, it's just hard to see the path to where he gets what he needs at this point in his career and they keep the number where they need it to. And so that's that's what I think it comes down to. I mean, fans probably don't like hearing this stuff. I mean, it's really down to the hard cap league. I think in an alternate universe, if we remember pre-2005, like back in the old days, the Leafs probably would have kept Hyman last summer and if they didn't have, you know, if they could go above the cap, if there was no cap, you'd probably sign all the guys you like and it's a different sort of league. But now I think more difficult business decisions have to be reached by teams that are trying to compete. And, you know, ultimately it might price him, it might price McKayev out of town. And we've seen that over the years, whether way back to JVR, Bozak, Gardner, all these guys were sort of let to walk because the Leafs couldn't pay them what they were going to get somewhere else.
Yeah. No, and that's totally understandable. I guess my concern for the Leafs would be that that's not the position that you mess with, right? You can replace Zach Hyman. You did with Bunting. And maybe you can replace Jack Campbell. I'm not saying you can't replace him or even find an upgrade. But
right. It's
likely going to cost you something to do that. Like the idea of them concluding, okay, had to sign Riley, got to keep the four up front, let's find a couple of goalies at $1 million apiece or whatever it's going to be. Man, that's a gamble. Like, because you might have the makings of a great team. Lines 1 through 4, deep pairings 1 through 3. If you've got goaltending that's bottom third in the league, you can't win. You cannot win. So
yeah. It's
right. A gamble.
You might get everything else right but that will dictate how we're talking about next season.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
I think it'll be interesting to see. I don't know. I mean, they're pretty tight-lipped, and you know that, CJ. Like, there's a cone of silence on both sides. If any information comes out about, you know, what Campbell's camp is looking for and, you know, what they're willing to give, that'll be interesting because to see how far apart they are or if they can bridge the gap and just make it happen and make everyone happy for both camps if that's what the Leafs want to do.
Right. Well, I mean, look, his agent is Kurt Overhard, who's traditionally done a good job for his clients in terms of maximizing what they can earn. And so that's not to say, look, you've been in that situation. A player can instruct his agent what to do, but if it comes down to the agent, I think it's going to be a difficult negotiation to find common ground given where the two sides are at.
We'll see where it goes. Great stuff, CJ. Thank you for doing this, buddy. We'll do it again soon.
All right. Talk soon, boys. Have a good weekend.
Chris Johnston, our TSN Hockey Insider. We'll come back and tee up. No Jays tonight, but the Reds are in town tomorrow. Basically mandatory sweep. Everyone's beating the Reds. Everyone. Although they were leading earlier today. I don't know if they held on or not.
Don't say it.
Maybe they did get a win. Maybe not everyone's beating. They did. Yeah, they won. I think they beat Cleveland 4-2 earlier today. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, so the PGA Championship continues to roll on. It's hot down there in Oklahoma.
Yeah, it looks hot. Tiger was sweating up a storm.
Yeah. Because it's hilly, right? I mean, he's in incredible shape.
Unbelievable.
But, Oklahoma, that's the south, but it's kind of like the north end of the south, right?
Still hot.
It's hot.
Looked so hot today. So,
definitely.
Oh, well.
It is. And McIlroy's in the clubhouse at 5-under. You know, we had Steve Sands join us earlier this hour. The significance of having the lead after 36 holes in a tournament like this, especially at a golf course like that. So that would go a long way if he plays well tomorrow. And Tiger was 4-over. John Daly was 2-over. John Daly and his cart beat Tiger today. I don't know what to make of that.
He's just bombing up the middle of the fairway,
Look
too.
Look at him. Look at everyone behind him, his playing partners, his caddies. Like, imagine you're there watching it. You're like, there's John Daly
just
driving around in his golf cart, like just cruising around.
I kind of respect it somehow.
Yeah. All right, Noodles, bring your NHL hats out west. We'll catch you, I guess, next week.
Next week I'm going away. I'll be at the game tomorrow, the game Sunday, and I fly back Monday. We got the show, so it'll be Tuesday I'll be back. So we're good to go.
Yes, full recap. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be fun out there. Say hi to everyone for us. And
I will.
Enjoy yourself out there. We are out of here. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.